Intervju Radija Študent.
And by extension, audience, artistic effects. These effects are tied to random, further in their momer, the memory of their occurrence into what we can call the
Brandon Label in Tao G. Vrhovec Sambulec. Lep pozdrav, drago poslušalstvo, v intervju Radija Študent, kjer nocoj gostimo dva ustvarjalca, ki sta del projekta Seciranje ušesa oziroma Dissecting the Ear, niza skupinskih razstav, ki raziskujejo več pomenskosti procesov poslušanja in slišanja v različnih kulturnih kontekstih. Prva edicija je bila predstavljena junija 2007 v galeriji Sein v Groningenu na Nizozemskem. Drugi del pa se otvarja danes, 25. novembra ob 20. uri v galeriji Škuc v Ljubljani. Pogovarjamo se z ameriškim zvočnim umetnikom in teoretikom zvočne umetnosti Brandonom Labelom ter domačim skladateljem in zvočnim umetnikom, improvizatorjem Taom G. Vrhovcem Sambolcem. Kot uvod v intervju bomo sedaj slišali delček kompozicije Brandona Labela z naslovom Death of the Composer or All Tongues Are Mothers, ki se nahaja na kompilacijski CD-ki Social Music njegove založniške hiše Errant Bodies Press. Social Music pa je tudi naslov predavanja Brandona Labela, ki ga bo imel jutri ob 20. v okviru razstave Seciranje ušesa, ponovno v galeriji Škuc. Intervju bo potekal v angleščini.
The parameters which distinguish the opposite part
and between
from a larger context in the social space. This is in part due to the nature of cultural production being slightly ahead of broader issues, critical distance, romantic isolation,
tied to the random interplay of
disinterest. The recording studio functions
to the formation as the, of what we could call a public.
This is a struggle.
I would like to welcome Brandon Label and Tao G. Vrhovec Sambolec in our studio. And I would like to start this interview with a broader question regarding sound art as a term, what it means, how could we define it, could we draw a larger horizon of this term sound art. Maybe you, Brandon, because you wrote also a quite influential book on the subject.
Right, okay. Yeah, of course, sound art is also a kind of slippery term because I think by nature it's kind of brings different disciplines together, different histories and different kinds of approaches to creative practice. But somehow or another, it seems to sit between what we might call music and art. So sort of bringing together certain, kind of musical aesthetics or ideas about performance or electronic kind of instrumentation and locating it more in a spatial situation. So it somehow then starts to occupy a location or an architecture that seems to bring us closer to a kind of visual arts practice. So somehow this crossover, I guess, between kind of experimental music tendencies or histories or approaches and kind of a visual arts sensibility or practice in terms of kind of locating the work or installing the work or relating it to the audience in a way that's outside the concert hall, for instance, or the club. And then in sort of doing that, it seems to then focus people's attention in a different way so that suddenly maybe certain other questions start to arise, certain other kinds of appreciation for sound that, sound art seems to offer.
Mm-hmm. Tao, you were one of the first in Slovenia to basically start presenting works that we can put into the term sound art with your sound series called Beat Shift in Gallery Kapelica. So how do you see sound art in Slovenia in, let's say, last 5 or 6 years? You were also part of some exhibitions in some galleries that try to present works from this broad area.
Well, I mean, what I would say is there was not much sound art going on in Slovenia. There is still not much sound art going on in Slovenia. It is starting to establish nowadays more and more, but which doesn't mean that there was no sound art in Slovenia. There was and there still is individuals that are working for quite some years, to name, the first name that comes to mind is Marko Košnik, mm-hmm. Institute Egon March, also working on a radio student in the 80s, mm-hmm. From the 80s on, having the Ministry of Experiment. And he was doing sound art as Brandon just defined it, mm-hmm. Since very long time. And another person that started a bit later, started working out of collaboration with Marko Košnik is Porucavski, mm-hmm. That comes to mind. And nowadays there is a bit more people. I would say that the scene is maybe a bit bigger on experimental electroacoustic music than sound art. Mm-hmm. Of course, I mean, I would say that not like every piece that is installed in gallery and has sound to it. It's like I don't understand every piece that has a sound in, like a sound art, because there is a lot of video art going on, mm-hmm. using sound and stuff. But that's not it's not dealing with the issues and with sensibilities that would go into sound art. Mm-hmm. But what can I say? I mean, it's slowly coming along. Mm-hmm. I hope it will we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But it's slowly coming along, and I mean, my activity is trying to propagate this field here, and to kind of offer the works and lectures and address this sensibility and evoke it in the audience, basically. Mm-hmm. So
one of the main ingredients of sound art, as Brandon mentioned, is the space, the architecture, the use of sound in the space, etc. But I would like to ask, how does the space itself define the sound art in general? Is this the gallery space? Or how does the institution define the sound art itself?
Mm. Well, I mean, I think one thing that's very interesting about sound art in general is that it also challenges space, or it is extremely flexible and interested in kind of the multiplicity of kind of space. And I think it sort of offers the institution the opportunity to almost extend itself if it accepts that challenge, mm-hmm. in a way. So the way that sound art, of course, already starts to challenge the ability to, of course, contain sound in that a kind of static object or even a video seems to occupy that more, the ability for the institution to kind of fix it, and not only kind of in language, but of course in space. And that sound art, of course, is something that leaks out, and it's kind of interested in incorporating what's outside, mm-hmm. you know. And I think this is a very strong tendency within sound art and sound artists' kind of practice, is that spatially speaking, they seem to kind of see or hear sound in this kind of expanded way, mm-hmm. and want to use that, want to kind of stage it, to feed it into a project. And so by nature, it sort of starts to make connections between multiple places. I mean, I think, of course, Tao's work is a perfect example of this, mm-hmm. this sort of interest or to embrace the possibility to make these kind of networks. So I think it's actually a very important kind of practice for the institution, also in a very contemporary way, that that the sort of institution of a gallery or the museum, in a way, in relationship to what we might call kind of network culture that we seem to be living in today, that it's almost the institution seems to also be a bit behind kind of living in the contemporary way.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe sound art actually starts to instigate a kind of more contemporary understanding for the institution that it should kind of function more as a distributed, networked, live kind of space.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, those are just some thoughts.
Yeah. But what do you think if we put the sound art totally into the context of music? Is it already embraced in this sort of, let's say, musical institution? Because in my experience, a lot of ideas and principles based in sound art are already echoing in the contemporary music.
Well, I wouldn't say that it is actually integral part of music, because the like music institution, the institution of music, I could say, has maybe even a bigger problem with this leaking of like that you said about that the sound art is kind of the condition of sound art and the interest in leaking and like letting the sound like spread around a bit uncontrolled into places where it's not supposed, where it's not expected, not supposed to be. I mean, my experience is that of course the music institutions are kind of like they are giving some signals about, okay, well, we should probably be involved in that,
mm-hmm.
but they don't know how to embrace it,
mm-hmm.
somehow. And because for the musical, talking from my own experience, from the musical institutions, like the institution of a concert is still something where the rhetorics happen, and like once you have like a sound art, they really don't know how to grasp it. And I think that like, again, talking from my experience, the visual art spaces are on one hand much more open to that, to sound art.
Mm-hmm.
On another hand, sometimes you run into a kind of a problem of or like misunderstanding about, again, the leak, like, you know, that trying to contain the sound as if it is an object, and like people get, like the institution gets surprised, like by the fact that it's leaking, yeah. And that can so there is like this kind of strange like, I mean, it's neither nor kind of, but I think that in general I could say that conceptually the visual art institutions like embrace it so far a bit more than the music institutions.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should now focus on one big aspect of sound art, is to alter the way we hear and perceive things.
Mm-hmm.
This is also connected to the project you are both involved in tonight at Gallery Schkutz, called Dissecting the Ear. So how do you think the audiences react to sound art coming from basically musical context, focusing now sound art?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is this way in which, at least maybe one answer would be that, I mean, sound art seems to also try to not only kind of make make sound or kind of produce compositions or installations, but do so in a way that there's a kind of self-reflection on the materiality, the experience of sound. So, and I think this is why it starts to also find a home more within the visual arts kind of discourse and context, because that already has a kind of built-in kind of language about sort of critical viewpoint or kind of self-reflection upon certain conditions of life.
Mm.
So sound art seems to also sort of ask the audience or provide a platform for saying, well, this is something to hear, but at the same time it sort of asks or invites your listening to then sort of think, to think about, yeah, well, what am I hearing, and yeah, how does sound function in everyday life, and what is the sounds around me, and how do I feel about them, or, you know, so it sort of immediately seems to kind of ask those questions that maybe in a way you don't really find in a kind of musical history or discourse. I mean, that's of course, you know, can be talked about, you know, because there's obviously no clear-cut line there. But I think that's, for me, what's also kind of important or exciting about sound art as a practice, is that it takes seriously the experience of listening and at the same time tries to develop some kind of critical space or self-reflective space for the audience.
If one component of the sound is also the social aspect of it, how about silence? You will deal with questions of silence based also on the work of John Cage in your work in dissecting the ear. So silence nowadays seems to be a problem. We now have manifestos for silence, so it became also a political thing, kind of, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, silence is a for me a really complex kind of issue and very interesting idea that, of course, someone like Cage also, you know, explored and became a very kind of central figure within his project. And also, I think the question of the social becomes also very interesting and complex when you start thinking about how silence performs within that kind of context. I mean, and in a way, I think that for me, what I hope to kind of explore or kind of put forward is that it sort of goes both ways. I mean, that silence, for Cage, being a very positive kind of idea, and also I think socially speaking, there tends to be some idea that, you know, we should be living in a quieter environment. You know, that the world is getting noisy, that noise produces a kind of deadening of the senses, and a kind of, you know, which all of it is true, of course, and that noise is also very problematic in terms of health. And so silence, or the idea of the quiet, has this kind of immediate sense about the positive.
But isn't it paradoxically in modern society that the noise is so common that we felt really comfortable with it, and when silence appear, we are suddenly in total discomfort?
Yeah, no, it's true. I always find that way when I go to the country. I mean, I can't, you know, the idea that you can't sleep because it's too quiet is kind of a perfect expression of that. But I also sort of, I think it's also important to see silence too as a very strong negative idea as well, or that it can be used or located against the social. So the idea of being silent, you know, of being silenced, of not being given a space to make a noise, you know, all of these things, of course, bring forward a whole another perspective. So silence in that way becomes this multifaceted sort of issue that kind of runs in these different directions. That I think are kind of important to sort of think about. particularly in this field sometimes where silence becomes, yeah, maybe following Cage's lead becomes an extremely positive notion. So that's a little bit what I was sort of curious about in doing the work for the Dissecting the Ear exhibition. Mm-hmm. So looking at the question of deafness, you know, how do we engage with that, or how does that perform in relationship to the sort of question of silence, and locating that against Cage and in an exhibition to do a sound, but sort of, yeah, somehow wanting to expose silence in this kind of complex way.
Mm-hmm. So let's finish our interview with a short presentation of Dissecting the Ear, the project. It's the second edition. The first edition was based in Netherlands 2 years ago, and this is its second edition based in Galerie Schutz in Ljubljana.
It's a series, it's an ongoing series of exhibitions so far. Let's see where it takes us, which is exploring the ambiguities of hearing and listening processes in like an everyday or different cultural environments, and like it's like kind of exploring the significance of audio communication or audible communication. The first exhibition was 2 years ago. We kind of created the concept together with Bojan Fajfrić, and invited several artists to contribute with the works. We did one in Holland, and now the second edition with different artists here in Ljubljana. Mm-hmm. So that will be Brandon Labelle, and then the artistic couple Jake DeVos and Diane Donk from Rotterdam, and me, and there is like still a ghost of Bojan Fajfrić there in a piece that we do together, that is kind of presentation of audiovisual and auditory illusions. Mm-hmm. Just a compilation of tests and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean the exhibition is conceptualized in 3 layers. So this one is the catalytic event. The second layer is this audiovisual lab, which kind of points to this audio and audiovisual illusions. And then the third layer is the artist projects that kind of deal with sound communication from different cultural contexts or situations. And for this edition in Schutz, it turned out that we are all dealing with voice. So it's a voice exhibition, basically, from very different aspects, mm-hmm. from really different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you both. And let's invite our listeners again on the opening of Dissecting the Ear tonight at 8 o'clock at Galerie Schutz in Ljubljana.
Poslušali ste intervju s Brandonom Labellom in Taom G. Vrhovcem Samboljcem, z akterjema projekta zvočne umetnosti Seciranje ušesa oziroma Dissecting the Ear, ki se nocoj ob 20. odpira v prostorih Galerije Škuc v Ljubljani. Intervju je pripravil Luka Zagoričnik.
Critical distance, romantic
semantic isolation,
or simple
this
disinterest.
Interest. These recorders
the recording
have been functions
as a perfect model
to
of
produce
music, struggle. To
struggle. Music is a struggle to produce culture.
Interview Radia Student.